At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
A warm up from Elo, welcome to Lovey Las Vegas for Justin Kensuke with myself, Jacob Spears, and now a part of the Beeson Family and Podcast, and we've got an absolutely tremendous podcast for you guys. It's another one of our conference previews. We go to the Ohio Valley Conference today. A very much new-look Ohio Valley Conference as Austin Peay, Belmont, and Murray State. They're out of the fold, and they get replaced by a pair of teams stepping up to the D1 level in Lindenwood along with Southern Indiana, and then they welcome in Arkansas Little Rock. So this is going to be fun to take a look at in the second segment. Blake Lovell, he does a great job over there at Blue Ribbon Yearbook. On top of that, he does the Locked On SEC podcast, Marching to Madness podcast. You're able to catch him over there at Southeastern 14. List goes on and on. He's going to be breaking down all these rosters in the second segment, and I will give the disclaimer right now. If you are not a fan of fades and listening to teams that are not necessarily the world's greatest at college basketball, you might want to tune out right now because this conference is relatively brutal, and we're going to do our best to be able to dissect all of it and try to find out a little bit more about these teams, as it's going to be a little bit of a rough run of it, but Blake does a great job being able to break this down, and we're going to be able to find the spots of brightness, and we are going to, shall we say, amplify the darkness that we're going to be seeing in this conference this year. So we're going to be talking to Blake in the second segment, and then in the final segment, I'm going to give you guys my projector or finish for this conference, and I deserve a medal of honor for doing this conference preview, because in all my years of previewing conferences, this might be the worst conference preview I've ever done. Not in terms of the quality of it, in terms of my conference preview. I'm talking about in terms of the actual level of talent in this conference. It's bad. So we're going to just leave it at that. And if you do have a question, comment, segment, idea, whatever you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter timeline, @unit_d1. Keep in mind, letter CM, maybe it does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And then the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast. Find that 5-star review. Now that the formalities are done, let's get down to business. Let's take a look at what we can expect out here in this conference. And what you can expect is some relatively grody offense and some terrible defense. I wish I could put it any other way, but man, this is not necessarily too terrific. Now, let's take a look at the two teams that are going to be coming up from the D2 level to the D1 level, because obviously there's no betting trends, and here in the first segment, going to be taking a look at styles of play and betting trends of these teams, because that is always something to take a look at. You obviously have no betting trends when it comes to the two teams coming from the non-D1 level up to the D1 level, and I don't know if there's really much precedent, because I can't remember ever a conference being quite this awful that is going to allow some opportunities for these teams. You've got Southern Indiana, who last year, and they weren't a blazer. They weren't a team that they played very slow either. Their big forte was that they were able to grab more than 7 rebounds per game than their opponents. So they were able to do a very solid job on that front. This is a bunch that they don't necessarily do the world's greatest job of being able to knock down threes, shooting about 32% from distance. But last season, what they did a very good job of was on the defensive end. They allowed opponents only hit about 29% of their threes. They instantly become one of the better defensive teams in this conference. They are headlined by a guy by the name of Jelani Simmons, who you may remember. He actually wound up seeing some starts while he was at Youngstown State. They've done a solid job of being able to bring in some transfers from the D1 level. Trevor Lakes is someone that wound up playing at Nebraska. Nate Kittle is going to be coming in from Indiana State. So they do have some talent there. And then Lindenwood is a bunch that they actually wound up finishing 12-17 at the Don D1 level last season. They're actually in the same conference as Southern Indiana. Southern Indiana, they wound up going 18-8. They were actually able to go 9-3 on the road. They actually won more games or had a better win percentage on the road rather than at home. So I do think that that's a little bit intriguing. Meanwhile, you've got a Lindenwood team that they did wind up finishing last season with a little bit of a tough mark of 12-17. But if you do take a look at this Lindenwood team, you're going to find out they've got some big-time transfers that are going to be coming in that I think are really going to be changing the fortunes of this program. Now, the big thing with Lindenwood is they've got to be a little bit better on the defensive side of things. They were allowing opponents to really be able to pour it in, as this is a bunch that they wound up allowing a little bit over 76.5 points per contest last season. Opponents shot 37.5% from three-point range as well. That's pretty unacceptable. They got out-rebounded by 3.5 rebounds per contest as well, but they do have some building blocks to be able to take off with. They only turn the ball over 10.5 times per game as well, so you do have some good things with regards to this team. They shot as a collective about 34% from three-point range. Not a team that they were necessarily overly slow, not a team that they were overly fast either. They had a little bit more of a set tempo, though, rather than Southern Indiana, who you're going to find out they wound up being a little bit all over the place with the way that they would play very, very fast one game and then very, very slow in another game. And you do have yourself a conference here in the Ohio Valley in which you've got a few teams that they're willing to go up tempo. A little bit of this is based on what we did wind up seeing last season as well, because you did wind up having a team in Belmont that they were always incredibly efficient on the offensive end, Murray State as well. And both of those teams were very solid on defense. The main headliner, that would be Murray State, as they were actually a top 25 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. So going to be fascinating to see what we wind up getting here now that those two teams are going to be out of the conference, just in terms of a pace of play standpoint. And I mean, you're really just left with the remains of last season's conference, because out there in the Ohio Valley, the one team that returns that was very solid last year, that would be Morehead State. They wound up going 13-5 in conference, but they lose each out of their top five scorers from last season, and nobody else returning wound up finishing above 500 in the conference. Your next best team was Southeast Missouri State at 8-9 in conference play. Every one of these teams wound up having a win percentage overall for the season of 43.8% or lower, and as a result, the betting trends are not going to be too pretty when we do wind up taking a look at them. You do wind up seeing a few teams wind up trying to launch a little bit more of a demonstrative style. Southeast Missouri State, they wound up really going up tempo. They were 33rd in the country in terms of total possessions per game, and resulted in them also being in the bottom 25 of the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession and a per game basis. He did wind up seeing a team wind up going the complete other way, and we are going to exemplify just how bad this offense is in a few minutes. Eastern Illinois, they were 299th in terms of total possessions per game, and they wound up averaging 56.3 points per game. That was the second fewest in all of college basketball last season. The only reason why they avoided the cellar is because IUPUI was literally one of the worst teams that we've ever seen on offense, and I'm not even kidding here. Blake is going to wind up talking about this in the second segment, and I do get the stat from Blake. Among games against D1 teams. So this throws out the games that they wound up playing against non-D1 competition, and they wound up having two of those in total. So in their 29 games against D1 competition, they scored more than 62 points once. Once! In 29 games against D1 competition, they broke the 62-point barrier once. Oh, boy. That's not good. That's not good at all. So we are going to be taking a look at that. And, well, you don't necessarily have the world's greatest defenses out there as Tennessee Tech. They were a team that they were looking to kick it a little bit more up tempo last season. They and Tennessee State were interesting bunches. Tennessee Tech, they were 79th in the country in terms of possessions per game. Tennessee State were in 36th. And you wound up seeing quite a few of these teams be a little bit more up tempo, but not necessarily overly demonstrative. UT Martin, they were a team that was 72nd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. A team that really did slow it down was Morehead State. They were right around 300th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. And then SIU Edwardsville, just a team that has been all over the place. Sometimes this team winds up playing fast. Some years this team winds up playing very slow. You wind up getting this team just be very, very herky-jerky, and there's really no rhyme or reason as to anything that they wind up doing. They were 73rd in the country in terms of total possessions per game, and wound up seeing a bunch of teams that they were just unable to put the ball in the basket. As SIU Edwardsville, I mentioned them, they were 350th in the country in terms of three-point shooting percentage, and as you can tell, this was a little bit more of an under-conference last season, goes without saying there. And then when it comes to Eastern Illinois, I talked about their offense, second worst team in terms of points scored on a per possession basis last year, and boy oh boy did they wind up earning that title. And I mean, from there it wound up being a little bit better with some of these teams, but you still had some relatively brutal offenses. They now leave the fold, but Austin Peay, they were 324th in the country in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. SIU Edwardsville, 318th. UT Martin, they wound up being 316th in the country in this sector, so having some very, very brutal offenses. Obviously it was Belmont and Murray State that really carried the banner for this conference in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. Both of these teams were in the top 27 with that regard. And then you take a look at Morehead State, the main returning team from last season, they were right around 140th, so it's not like they were some juggernaut themselves. UT Martin, they were 316th. Tennessee Tech, Tennessee State, both between 225th and 230th. And then they wind up bringing in Little Rock. This conference does as well. Little Rock was 312th in the country in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, and they were a team that was a little bit all over the place in terms of their possessions per game as well. As this is a Little Rock team that in recent years, they've been a little bit up and down with regards to their pace of play, and as a matter of fact, home and road, they wound up averaging 5.5 possessions more per game when they were at home rather than when they were on the road. So a bunch in which they were not afraid to speed it up, they were not afraid to slow it down, and you had a bunch of teams in this conference that were not necessarily great at being able to cover the spread, and for that matter, you really didn't have anyone other than Eastern Illinois that was too bad either. Eastern Illinois, 11-18 against the spread, they covered just 38% of their games, and then from there, UT Martin, Morehead State, SIU Edwardsville, they all covered between 43% and 48% of their games. As SIUE, Morehead State, they both went 14-15-1 and 14-16-1, and then UT Martin, they went 12-16 against the spread. Southeast Missouri State, Tennessee State, both went 15-14-1 against the spread. Tennessee Tech was actually the team that wound up leading things with a 16-13-1 against the spread record. Obviously, it's out there in the Sun Belt, so with Arkansas Little Rock, it's a little bit of a different scenario for them. But with Little Rock, they went 8-16-1 against the spread. Oh boy. I mean, if you're taking a look at the landscape of college basketball, they actually did wind up avoiding the cellar because Pacific was a big, giant, hot mess last season, as they wound up being able to cover right around 20% of their games. They were one of the worst against the spread teams that we've really ever seen in college basketball, but here are the only teams that wound up having a worse cover rate than our good friends over there with Little Rock. Pacific, obviously, NC State, Cal State Bakersfield, Oregon State, Marshall, Miami of Ohio, Lamar, Georgia, led by Tom Crean, and that's the end of the list. So it was not necessarily too tremendous for them, but what you did wind up finding out there in the Ohio Valley Conference as well is that on these teams that they were catching the big giant Mondo numbers whenever they were on the road, it didn't necessarily wind up resulting in the world's greatest results for them, because you do take a look at how Belmont and Murray State wound up doing as favorites, and both of these teams, they were still able to cover right around 50%+ of their games. As both of these teams as favorites, they wound up going a combined 28-25-2 against the spread, so they did a solid job. And Southeast Missouri State as a favorite, they went 7-3 against the spread. Most of these other teams, Morehead State, Tennessee Tech, along with Tennessee State, they all covered between 46% and 47% of their games. They all went one game below 500 in the role of favorites. So you wound up having things actually be set very well in terms of a line perspective as to how big of underdogs these teams should have been. And you wound up seeing Murray State be the demonstrative team at home, 9-2-1 against the spread. You wound up having Tennessee State, Southeast Missouri State, they wound up having a little bit of a leg up at home, both of these teams 8-3 against the spread. SIU Edwardsville, they wound up going 7-4. And then Eastern Illinois, they just could wind up getting nothing going at 3-8 against the spread. So you did wind up having a little bit of home court advantage, especially for a team like Southeast Missouri State. They're a little bit further away from most of the other teams in this conference. They wound up getting a little bit of a leg up for travel. And then you just take a look at the Ohio Valley Conference. you wind up having two teams wind up playing more than 48.3% of their games to the over. That would be Tennessee Tech, who actually had 18 overs or 12 unders. They played much faster last season than they have in the past. And then Southeast Missouri State, because they wound up playing absolutely no defense whatsoever. They wound up having 15 overs, 13 unders, and two pushes. But Austin Peay, who's now out of the conference, they played 77% of their games to the under. They were the number one team in terms of under rate in all of college basketball. But Eastern Illinois, just because of complete and utter ineptitude, they were not too far off in terms of best under teams out there in college basketball. They were number two. 8 overs and 21 unders, and the stat that I laid out probably makes all the sense in the world to you guys at this point, but you also wound up having a few other teams that they very much were able to come through in terms of the under. UT Martin, 17 unders, 9 overs, and 2 pushes. That was in the top 20 in college basketball in terms of under rate as well. You did wind up seeing, as you wind up going down the line, a team like a Tennessee State wind up having 16 unders to 14 overs. Most of these teams from there, they wound up being a little bit more 50-50 teams. But what I think is intriguing is what you wind up getting in conference play as well. Because in conference play, the only team that wound up playing more overs than unders was Tennessee Tech. From there, Austin Peay, 78% of their games to the under. UT Martin, they wound up playing just 4 out of their 18 games over the total. You wound up having Murray State while they were in there, and Tennessee State, they played 12 out of their 20 games in conference to the under. Just a struggle for a lot of these teams to be able to score, and all the teams that they wound up playing no defense whatsoever, they wound up having their total set up a little bit higher. So, I mean, it's just one of these cases in which what winds up winning out, really, really bad defense or poor shooting. So, yeah, it was not necessarily great outside of Belmont and Murray State last season, and now you've got Belmont and Murray State both out of the fold, so it's going to lead to a really, really interesting conference this season. I don't know if it's necessarily for the positive, but you know what? In this industry, you're able to make money regardless of if you've got a whole bunch of high-powered teams out there in the Big 12, or you had some, shall we say, less than stellar teams out there in the Ohio Valley. You're able to make money off of both Tennessee Tech and Duke. So every single conference winds up getting covered on this podcast, and Blake Lovell does a great job out there in Nashville, Tennessee. That's where you actually find Tennessee State. And you know what? Someone has to win this conference to get a bid to the NCAA tournament. So we're going to talk about this with Blake, take a look at every single one of these teams, dive into where the bright spots are and where it's just especially dark. And that's coming up next right here on Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Guy Hoops Peterson, now a part of the Beeson Family and Podcast, the Ohio Valley Conference Weekly Special.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
And we're back in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Ames Pierce, and now part of the VSiN family of podcasts, as this is the Ohio Valley Conference preview edition, and great to be joined by our guest as Blake Lovell does a great job breaking down the game of college basketball, a man that he is out there in Nashville, Tennessee, and even though Belmont's out of the conference, we still do have a team that is out there in his neck of the woods at Tennessee State, and this man does a great job with Blue Ribbon Yearbook, Southeastern 14. You've seen him on HXCBB. You've seen him on the Clutch Point Sports app. This man does it all. The Marching to Madness podcast, the Blocked On SEC podcast. And to be able to follow him on Twitter at TheBlakeLovell. Last name is spelled L-O-V-E-L-L. And Blake, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, always enjoy it, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you aboard. And, well, it's a very interesting conference, to say the least, as we've got a little bit of realignment because now Murray State is out of the fold. Belmont is also out of the fold, but they wind up bringing in Arkansas Little Rock, and they wind up bringing in Lindenwood University. Let's first talk about one of the teams that is coming in Lindenwood, because this is a team that they're coming up from the D2 level, and we've seen a lot of teams go from the D2 level to the D1 level and have success. I don't think that this is going to be the case with Lindenwood. They come in after having a sub-500 record out there in the Division II ranks last season. Now, they do bring in a few guys that were playing D1 basketball last season to be able to fortify themselves, but defense certainly was not up to bar for them at the Division II level last season. Blake, I don't know if you're reading anything else into this, but Lindenwood, it feels like they were brought in a little bit as more of a football school rather than anything else. Now, the fact that they do wind up bringing in Cam Burrell from Western Illinois to be able to help things out down low, that should be able to help them out. But I foresee a relatively rough season for Lindenwood unless of course Childs has a massive season.
Don't have huge expectations either. And I tell you, Greg, it's like you said, the OVC looks a lot different without Belmont and Murray State leading the way. And nothing against Lindenwood, but I think this is kind of one of those examples of really needing a school by necessity. And like you mentioned, I think for football reasons more so than basketball right now. So a lot of unknowns. Anytime there is a team that transitions to this level, as we always say, you don't exactly know. Some teams, you know, you try to get a feel for where guys are at, where a program's at, but it's just such a huge jump. And some teams we've seen, and I think it's been a smaller number than maybe some would think, that have had that success right away, being able to transition. And, you know, I guess if you're looking at it from Lindenwood's perspective, this is not a strong conference at the moment. And so maybe that's something that you perhaps have going for you, where you can be competitive in the conference, even if you still have little ways to go. So don't necessarily have a ton of expectations for Lindenwood in their first season in the OVC, but the OVC is kind of in an interesting territory right now for sure.
And the one thing I will say is that Chris Childs put up some really good numbers over there at Bryant, but it feels like he might be in a scenario in which we wind up seeing this with a lot of star players, in which a bad job for him is going to be better than a good job for a lot of his teammates. And when that's the case, sometimes things wind up spiraling a little bit downhill from there. But I do think that it's really interesting that we wind up welcoming Little Rock as well as Little Rock. They wind up making a lot of sense just geographically. And Little Rock is a team that they have yo-yoed all around. This is a team that a few seasons ago, they were at the top of the Sun Belt, and then they went straight down the toilet bowl to the bottom. They went 3-11 in the Sun Belt last season, but they actually made a run in their conference tournament, and they bring back a lot of their pieces from last year. Isaiah Palermo, someone I'd say will give you right around 11 points per contest. Myron Gardner wound up having his moments with right around 10 points, 6 rebounds per contest, so he was relatively good for this team. They do wind up losing someone like a Nikolai Medic, who was able to do a very solid job. towards that back half of the season as well. This is a team that it feels like there's a lot of misfit parts. If they just wind up having that one guard that's able to bring it together because they didn't have that main facilitator, that would be able to do them some good. And I think that C.J. Walker might be that, or I think that C.J. White has a chance to be that guy as a little bit of a 6'5" point forward.
There's an interesting dynamic, I think, with this team. Like you said, maybe they're just kind of one player stepping up in that backcourt away from being able to, at least again, you know, make this transition a little bit easier. Obviously, a much different transition than what Lindenwood's going through. But coming from, you know, the Sun Belt to the OVC, it's, you know, again, that's kind of one where you look at it. And if you're Little Rock, you're probably looking at this and feeling like there's some opportunity here to make a splash right away. But yeah, there's some stuff they'll have to improve on. You know, really, when you look at kind of the past couple of seasons, they're not exactly heading in the direction you wanted to after that good season a couple of years ago. But like you talked about, the roster is sort of intriguing. I think maybe that's the best way to put it. So looking at some of these pieces and feeling like if things can just kind of come together a little bit better, especially, I think, you know, by no means a great defensive team last year. It seemed like teams were pretty effective in running their offense against them. And I don't really know, like Little Rock's one of those teams as I look down this list here and was kind of studying some of these teams. They're one that's really hard to place for me because I could see the upside, you know, of them surprising some people, but I could also see a team that, like we said, what won a combined, I think, 20 games the past couple seasons, but transitioning to a new conference, you never know kind of how that could go. So I don't have a great feel for this Little Rock team coming this season, but I do think it's one that has some interesting pieces. Just will it all kind of come together?
Yep. Little Rock is very much an unknown coming into this conference because we saw them have their triumphs a few seasons ago in the Sun Belt just to go down to the bottom of the Sun Belt. So that is going to be very fascinating, but I would argue that this team has actually more unknown pieces. As joining me on the podcast, we do have Blake Lovell, and that's a team that a few seasons ago represented this conference in the NCAA tournament in Morehead State. They wind up losing the man that was cleaning up in G&I Broome, who wound up averaging 17 points, 10.5 boards, and he had a whopping 3.9 blocks per contest. And not only that, they wind up losing each out of their top five scorers from last year. Now, their top returning scorer, Jake Wolf, shot 48% from three-point range. No question, he's going to be asked to do a little bit more out there in the backcourt, but I just am jaded by Mark Freeman, someone who spent some time in this conference at Tennessee State. He does a good job of being able to dish out the ball. My problem with Mark Freeman has been this guy has been a walking turnover wherever he's wound up going. So I do take a look at this Morehead State team, and no doubt when you wind up losing G&I Broome and you don't replace him with another guy that's like 6'10" and can block shots like it's nobody's business, that's going to wind up putting you behind the eight ball. But I just take a look at this backcourt, and I do think that it all hinges upon Mark Freeman being able to cut down on those turnovers.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think that's something that they will definitely have to focus on now with Broome out of mix. And I'm sure Bruce Pearl is going to love being able to use Broome and his a variety of skills that he has. But yeah, that's something that for Morehead State, you're going to have to be a little bit more consistent, I think, in that area. And that will be something that we kind of look at with this team and, you know, kind of see what their trajectory looks like, you know, without a Belmont and Murray State, because it's felt like really, the, you know, a couple seasons there, obviously a couple years ago, Morehead State, you know, went 17 games, I think it was, in the conference. And they've been pretty competitive the past couple seasons, as we know. And it's been kind of right there, feeling like Preston Spradlin's done a good job kind of turning that program around and building some momentum and consistency the past couple seasons. But yeah, how does it look now without Broome? And I think that's the big question for them coming into the season. And can they be as effective in some of those areas, especially on the defense? And right, Greg, I mean, this was a very good defensive team last year. And, you know, talking about a team that was in the OVC, but they were very good in terms of their ability, obviously, the, you know, shot blocking and just being able to defend inside the arc and those kind of things. And that was a big key to their success. So that's a question you have, I think, for this team heading into the season. Can they be the team that kind of slides into that spot now with Murray State and Belmont gone? Because they feel like they're the one with the most momentum. Can they now become the new, you know, Belmont and Murray State of the OVC, because they've been there before, you know, they've been in that top spot and they've been right there challenging, but now can they kind of put kind of their stamp on this conference and just sort of dominate the top? I think they can with the pieces they have in place. And I think they kind of set up really well to maybe, you know, go into that top spot heading into the season.
And I think that this team is going to be very intriguing as well, because we talk about Lindenwood going from the D2 level up to the D1 level. Well, you've got the same thing that is going to be going down for Southern Indiana. And with Southern Indiana, if you took a look at them last season, they were one of the most random teams that you would find, as they would one night wind up playing a game of which it would be like an 89-80 shootout, and then the next night they'd be playing a 62-60 slobber knocker. So this is a Southern Indiana team that they wound up playing in a wide variety of ways. They wind up bringing in Jeremiah Hernandez from Kent State. I'm actually a little bit intrigued by Trevor Lakes, what he's going to be able to do as he winds coming in from Nebraska, a little bit of a 6'8" combo player. And then Nick Hiddle, he winds coming in from Indiana State. He's 6'10". He figures to be able to give this team a little bit of size. When it comes to Southern Indiana, I do think that it's going to be a little bit tough for them making the move on up. I do think that having Jelani Simmons coming in from Youngstown State, though, that is going to be nice for them to be able to build up. But I do take a look at what San Guard was able to do at Southern Indiana year in and year out. This is a team that they're a relatively solid D2 bunch. I think the big question is, are they going to be able to utilize, sort of for lack of a better term, that manipulation that was so successful for them at the D2 level up at the D1 level?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that is something that you look at, as we always say, with teams that do make that transition. And it's just, you're playing, you know, a different set of opponents. And I think it's just something that you can never really know exactly how that's going to unfold. That will be something that I think is a little interesting. Obviously, you know, something else, they do have familiarity with Lindenwood. So kind of picking up the continued rivalry there, just moving into a new conference. It's going to be interesting, I think, you know, really just for both of those teams, as we already talked about with Lindenwood, but looking at a Southern Indiana team and seeing kind of just, you know, how they approach it really, and knowing that there are some things you're going to have to do a little bit differently, and really just how, you know, you approach it from how you want to play. Because we've seen that before too, Greg. Teams that come up, they come into the Division I level and, you know, they've played one way this entire time that's kind of maybe given them some of that success they've had. But you have to change some things, and we know that. How do you kind of tweak things? And the recruiting, we know, is going to be a big deal. So I think we always say it, but it's like I put Southern Indiana right there with Lindenwood in terms of I just have no idea what to expect making that transition. And I think it's just hard to know in year one what you're going to get from that.
What is very intriguing is among teams not named Morehead State that wind up returning from last year's conference, the team that had the best conference record last season was a team that played some of the worst defense of any team out there in all of college basketball. And I'm talking about Southeast Missouri State. Brad Korn, former assistant at Kansas State, he's gotten things online with this team, and he does wind up bringing back some of the better scorers from last year. Philip Russell, as a little bit of a second-year freshman, 13.5 points, 3 assists per contest. He was able to do a very solid job out in the backcourt for this team. Chris Harris is someone that's able to give you right around 9-10 points per contest. He's able to dish out 3 assists per game. The big question I have for this team, they bring in a pair of 7-foot freshmen. David Adada, they also wind up bringing in Mason Hanbach. If either of these guys are able to give them anything down low, I think that there's a little bit of upside here with Southeast Missouri State, but they do wind up losing quite a bit from last season, and it is a case in which you wind up bringing in some of the guys from last season out there in the backcourt, but I was a guy like an Aquin Sparta who's just never lived up to his billing after he wound up being a highly touted guy from Maryland come in, and also can this team be able to hold opponents to fewer than 80 points per game on like what they were doing towards back half of last season?
Yeah, like you said, I think you got to play some more defense. I think that's going to be their key to kind of making that jump again with the opportunity available now with those teams in Belmont and Murray State gone. And, you know, you do look at this CMO team, I think is one of those teams that certainly has the potential to make a jump and maybe start being a team that's right there, you know, near the top year in and year out. And obviously, that's everyone's goal, but defense is where it's all going to be. It's just, you know, give up a lot of points. And even for a team, as we know, kind of get up and down the floor, and they certainly played at a very high tempo last year offensively, and they really tried to push the pace. And, you know, a team that relied on the three-point shot the ball pretty well from three. I think that's something they'll continue to try to lean on. They didn't have a ton of experience last year, too. So I think having some guys coming back, like you said, that's another year, you know, in the system. But I guess this is Brad Korn's third year now. And yeah, I think seeing some things with them, and you've seen kind of some of that progress be made. And now it's just, you know, go from 11 wins I think he had in his first season, go to 14 last season. Now, you know, can you get that winning record? Can you challenge up there near the top, knowing that some of those spots are now open? And can you play defense? That's what it's going to come down to. They're going to have to play more consistent defense. But if you really look at it, and again, kind of look at the state of the league, I don't know, Greg, that, you know, you're going to have the same kind of offensive firepower certainly we've had in recent seasons when we talk about not just, you know, Belmont and Murray State leaving and how good they were for offensively, but, you know, a Broom leaving a Morehead State. And that's not the knock. I mean, there's playmakers around this league. We pointed out some of them, but I think that's one too, where maybe the strength of the league goes down a little bit, and maybe that helps you by default. on the defensive side. So that's the big key for Southeast Missouri State this season. I think if they can answer some of those questions, just get much better. Like, they're just going to have to get better on that side. I think they can certainly make a jump.
I do think so as well, and I do think that Brad Korn is a relatively solid coach. Coming from Kansas State, he knows a little bit about defense. I do think that he's going to be able to preach that to his team, as joining me on the podcast, who do have Blake Lovely. He does a great job over there at Blue Ribbon Yearbook. And let's take a look at Tennessee State. As Brian Collins has had, shall we say, an uneven tenure thus far at Tennessee State. Starts out 9-21 in year number one, takes a big step up, 18-15. Things go down the toilet bowl from there at 14-19. Then he gets the team to 14-18 last year, and they've got a lot of pieces that wind up returning from last year. They do wind up losing Carlos Marshall, but with that said, you've got Marcus Fitzgerald, a guy that's able to give you 12 points, 2.5 assists per contest. Junior Clay comes in from within the conference while he was at Tennessee Tech. He was able to put up some relatively big numbers, so that is going to help. Boyd is someone that's capable of being a double-figure scorer as well. This team really lacks a little bit of something down low, especially with Kasim Nicholson, the only guy that wound up averaging more than 5 rebounds per game out of the fold for the team. So I do think that it's going to be very important for someone like Azul Keith to be able to step up after he winds coming in from Northern Illinois. But the more I take a look at this roster, the more I like this Tennessee State team. I'm not sure about you, but I think Zion Griffin, who winds coming in from UIC, can have a big impact immediately in a conference that I think we both agree quite down.
Yeah, we've talked about Griffin before and kind of the Horizon League and what kind of prospects were for him there at UIC. And now you add into this Tennessee State team, I think that's something that, you know, Collins has done a good job of. He's pretty good at, I think, identifying talent. It's just some of those things we said, maybe the chemistry and just other things have not been there necessarily for them, just some of the struggles they've had. And I think he's kind of had to adapt to his roster. Maybe that's one of the better ways to put it. I don't know exactly. I know they want to play fast. Like, they want to get up and down the floor, but I feel like, you know, just trying to sort of adapt to how their roster is has been something that they've had a challenge with in terms of just trying to figure out maybe that identity you need to really kind of enforce your style on other teams. And, you know, something else too, Greg, they've had issues with in recent years is they've not taken care of the ball great. And I think that's something that's really hurt them. Now, they've gotten better from where they were, I think, in his first season there, or even his first couple seasons. But that's still something that I think for them to be more efficient on the offensive side, they've got some things to fix on defense, but that efficiency has not necessarily been there all the time on offense. And that's going to be the big question when you bring in some of these guys, like we've talked about. Can that help you alleviate some of those issues? It's going to be a team that will, I'd be surprised more than not if they're not one of those teams right there near the top and perhaps having a chance to, like we said, compete for a title and probably still put them behind a team like Morehead State, just looking at the rosters. But I think it's one of those teams that, again, the pieces seem to be, if they just all come together nicely and kind of have some of these guys coming back, some of the guys coming in, maybe this is that season that they finally sort of make that big, big jump that they've been wanting to make. Of course, they did win 18 games several years ago, but I think they're another one you kind of circle as sort of a wait and see how does everything unfold. But I feel like if they can just figure out what their identity is and maybe some of these new guys will help them do that, then maybe they can kind of take that jump.
Well, we're trying to figure out what their identity is. I know the identity of this team at Tennessee Tech, being allergic to rebounding the basketball, as they wound up having one guy that averaged more than 4.1 rebounds per game, and Amadou Ciala, and he's now on the fold. And, I mean, you really take a look at this team, and they lose each out of their top three scorers from last season. I mean, the tenure of John Pelfrey, it has not necessarily been too tremendous for him. We all remember what he wound up doing while he was at Arkansas. After he wound up making the NCAA tournament in his first year there, things wound up going down the toilet bowl there. He has not really been able to get the Tennessee Tech team online. And we were just talking about Junior Clay and how he might be able to do a good job at his new landing spot out there in the OVC. He was the team's top scorer last year. I think this is really going to be a year in which they're going to need someone like a Deontay Wood, who averaged right around 7 points per contest last season and was relatively solid while he was at Jacksonville, to be able to step up. They do wind up bringing in Tyrone Perry, who was at Lafayette. He was able to be a double-figure scorer. But Jalen Sabree, one of their other big transfers who comes in from Morehead State, he just could never find his way while he was at Morehead State. And I take a look at the Tennessee Tech team. They played no defense whatsoever. And now they wind up losing their main form of scoring, and they're allergic to rebounding. I don't see how this winds up ending well for them.
I was going to say, I keep thinking about it. I'm like, this is John Pelfrey's fourth season. Like, I don't know. I feel like he just got there, but it's like, this is year four, and they haven't had a lot of success, to say the least. And I don't think it's exactly gone the way he's wanted it to, especially like we just said, going into year four. They've not been able to make that jump, you know, whether that's jumping for rebounds. I don't know, Greg. Like, it's just some of those things that have not worked out necessarily. And I don't know what that path is for them this season either. And like you mentioned, all the things you could point out as potential weaknesses for this team and unknowns. Yeah, I mean, they're there. And I think it's one where I don't really know what maybe you're going to get in terms of comparing this team to some of the others we've talked about thus far, that they could finish near the top. They're another one that I don't have a great feel for, but I think it's more of just, I don't know if it's feel or just more pessimism in terms of what they could accomplish, just kind of looking at the makeup from things. But when you bring in new guys, we know kind of the state of the transfer portal and everything. I think that always gives you the possibility to sort of rejuvenate things and maybe, you know, find those guys that could really push you forward and make the chemistry what it needs to be and fix some of those issues. Although I don't think they're going to fix them all completely, kind of help you improve in certain areas. We'll see if that happens with this team. But it's wild to think that this is Pelfrey's fourth season and they just have not been able to make any sort of jump whatsoever, not even a big jump. Like, they just haven't been able to make that jump at all. So we'll see what happens with them. I'm like you. I don't feel like this is a team that probably has the same sort of ceiling as the others we talked about, like the Morehead States and the Tennessee States.
Yeah, and if this podcast had emojis, this program would get a frowny face for what's happened the last few years. Eastern Illinois, because I just still go back to a few seasons ago. We talked about this when you were breaking down the Ryzen League with me. I have no idea why they wanted firing Link Darner over there at UW Green Bay, and I have no idea why Jace Boonauer wound up getting fired from Eastern Illinois after he wound up having Murphy's Law hit this team. And now we've got an Eastern Illinois bunch that, literally, I'm not even kidding here, nobody on this roster averaged more than 8.9 points per game. Now, the good news is they bring back someone like a CJ Lane. He was able to put up 7 points per contest. You want him seeing some moments of brightness from Rodolfo Rufino Bolis, who's able to give you 5 rebounds per contest. Dan Lures in limited minutes was able to shoot it well from 3-point range. But, I mean, this team was second to worst in all of college basketball in points per game. And the only reason why they avoided the Sellers, IUPUI, literally had a situation where they were playing 5 guys at the end of the season. So that's not great right there. They were towards the bottom of all of college basketball in terms of rebound rate. You just take a look at Eastern Illinois, and I mean, Marty Simmons has not been able to get things going, but I don't think that this is his fault, because I just think that Eastern Illinois should have never went away from Jace Boonauer. They've put Marty Simmons in an impossible situation, and as a result, this team has went straight down the tubes, and I don't think it's going to get a whole heck of a lot better this year.
No, you talked about their scoring, and I mean, just think about the stat, Greg. It's like, this is a Division I team that, you know, only won 5 games last year, and the reason why is they only scored more than 62 points once all season long. in this state of offense, Greg, think about that. A team that only scored more than 62 points once all season. I don't know what happened on February 12th, because they scored 82 against UT Martin. You know, that came out of nowhere, right? So, yeah, I mean, you're talking the team that regularly scored in the 40s and 50s in this era of college basketball to do that. It's not ideal. You got a lot of guys coming back that are not proven scorers at this point. And you just hope, I guess, if you're Marty Simmons, that everyone sort of takes the next evolution of their game on the offensive side, because that's the only way they're going to have a chance. It doesn't matter what they do on defense. I don't think they're going to win many games 55-50. I just don't see that happening. They have to find some sort of offense whatsoever. And, you know, if you're using KenPom, which I know a lot of people do, and you pull up Eastern Illinois from 21-22, and you just see all that bright red on the left side on offense. Like, it is a visual that you can't unsee. They were that bad on offense. And I don't even know what your expectations would be if you're Eastern Illinois right now. I guess it's just win more games than you did last year. But I think if you're Marty Simmons, you're trying to figure out, we got to find somebody who could score. We got to find some sort of offense, anything. Like, we have to be able to score more than 62 points in a college basketball game in Division I. And I think that's going to be something that I think they will. I think that stat will be a thing of the past, but I don't know exactly that that number gets that much bigger perhaps this year in terms of what their offensive output's going to be.
Yeah, I do agree with you there. It's a really grody situation, as Blake Lovell, he is joining me right now on the podcast. But we talk about the pessimism with a lot of these teams. How about if we wind up looking at a team that they were down in the conference last year, but I think that there's a path forward for them? That'd be UT Martin. And I don't think that's UT Martin's fault that they were so far down. Many people may remember he was the team's head coach literally days before the season, a few seasons ago. That was very unfortunate. His son, Parker Stewart, was actually the team's top scorer the season before. Parker Stewart is now back with the program after he spent a year at Indiana. The last time he was over there with UT Martin, he was averaging right around 17 to 18 points per game, was an absolute walking bucket for them. As a result, you wound up seeing a lot of turnover with the roster, but now there's a little bit more consistency as KK Curry wound up averaging right around 10 points, 5 rebounds per game. He is back in the fold for the team. KJ Simon, who he wound up following is coach Ryan Ritter from Bethune-Cookman over to this program. He put up big numbers last year, 17 points, 5 boards. He's back with the program. I think the biggest thing for them is finding that guy that's able to facilitate. Nobody other than Kobe Jeffries wound up being able to put up more than 2 assists per game last season. But I mean, with UT Martin getting back Parker Stewart, it's a very heartwarming story to say the least, but this is a team that, with how far down the OVC is, we talk about two teams going from the D2 level up to the D1 level. We talk about a team that was scoring literally fewer than 62 points per game. We talk about Tennessee Tech being allergic to rebounding. There's a path forward for this team to be able to crack into the top half of the field.
Yeah, there absolutely is. And that's what we said. That's the state of the OVC right now. I mean, you mentioned it. Ryan Ritter's someone I really believe Greg's going to do a good job there. I don't, you know, depending on how long he's there, but I think he is someone that will find success. And especially now with the state of the conference, that path forward looks a little bit easier than it was, you know, past several years or so. But now I think it does give you the opportunity. Yes, it wasn't a situation. You know, Anthony Stewart was someone who was just such a big part of this program. Guys love playing for him. You know, he had been there before as the assistant with Heath Schroyer. I can remember just kind of seeing them. I think it was they got to the OVC championship game one year, just having success. And now just to kind of trying to still, you know, kind of regroup from that and get your program back on track. But I think Ryan Ritter, someone, like you mentioned, will have an opportunity to do that. And I look at this team and the makeup of the roster, it's definitely a path for them to maybe this, Greg, I think there's a potential this could be the most improved team from a statistical standpoint this season in terms of win losses and those kind of things. I look at all these teams. I think there's certainly a chance for UT Martin to be that team winning 8 games last year. And perhaps, I don't know, you know, number wise what that looks like, but in this conference right now, I mean, doubling that, I don't think it's completely out of the question. I think it is one where you're going to be more optimistic about a team like this because you could at least see some things. And I think you know, kind of look at Ryan Ritter and what probably he's going to be able to accomplish there. There should be a lot of optimism, I feel like, for him. Yeah, I mean, you step into a tough situation, but I think there are some things they'll be able to do this season to kind of get moving forward.
Yep, and I'll correct myself a little bit. It was Anthony Stewart that wound up passing away, and then you had Montez Robinson have to be pretty much the interim coach in an impossible situation during the 2020-21 season where they actually wound up winning 8 games, which I know that doesn't sound like much, but I mean, the job that Robinson did before Ryan Ritter going in, you actually give him a lot of credit because that's just absolutely impossible. But I mean, what has felt like a relatively impossible situation as well, that'd be SIU Edwardsville. And well, if it's not going to be now for them to take a step forward with the way that we've been talking about these teams in the conference, I don't know when it's going to be. You still have the Wright brothers who are on the roster for SIU Edwardsville, which, I mean, it feels like they've been around for college basketball for forever. So that is going to be an interesting look for them with SIU Edwardsville. It just feels like when the offense winds up finally getting online, the defense goes down the toilet bowl. When the defense winds up going down the toilet bowl, they finally put up a few points. But it's going to be very interesting to see what you wind up getting out of Sean Pruitt because he's going to need to do a lot for this team. He put up right around 10 points, 7 boards per contest. This team, out of 358 D1 teams last season, they were 350th in terms of three-point shooting percentage. But they do bring in Jalen Hoge from James Madison. He should be able to give this team a little bit of an outside presence. So I do think that is going to be really big for them. They bring back Rayshon Taylor, 17.5 points, 5 boards, 3 assists, 2 steals, shot 36% from three-point range, and he's legitimately one of the best players in this conference. For SIU Edwardsville, just by default, I do think that they have to climb up in the conference standings. I think the question is, how far do they wind up climbing up?
Yeah, I think so too. That's the question I would have the same. It's inevitable that they do rise up the ladder here, given what we said about some of the other teams, really the majority of the other teams we've talked about. But I don't know. I still feel it's still a team that, and again, I'm not like going out on a limb here for a team that was what, I think 1-10 at one point last year in the conference. I just don't know if they still have, you know, packed that extra punch that they need to really be a factor. And that's something I would still kind of question for them heading into the season. Now, they didn't have a ton of experience last year. They're playing with a lot of young guys. And you wonder, you know, just maybe that next year now, what does that look like? That's a fair question too for them. But I think you put it best. If not now, when? Like, I think this is your opportunity knowing what's there. I mean, they've improved their win total the past 3 years. I mean, you know, it's not been a huge jump, but it's incremental progress. But I think at least now you have a chance, you know, to go from that 11 wins to maybe, I don't know, 15, 16, something like that. I think that would be at least, you know, showing that you are moving in the right direction. But I don't know. I still kind of struggle with this team studying them because I just don't know exactly what we would point to and say they're significantly better in that area than, you know, this team or that team against, you know, some of these teams. Like we said, some of those teams at the top, I don't know that they're there yet necessarily. So I would still mark this one down, though, as one of the more interesting teams maybe coming into the season, just because more than anything, it's just you don't really know what kind of expectations to place on them. You know, like we said, it's just a much different looking conference this year.
Yep, Blake, it is certainly a much different looking conference. And typically, we've got a little bit more upside when we talk about Murray State. We were able to talk about Belmont. Heck, when Jacksonville State was in the conference a few seasons ago, that wound up helping as well. But I do salute your efforts, and the fact that you wound up helping me out with this preview shows that you absolutely love college basketball, because this is, you know, going to be one of the lesser conferences out there, but you're able to make the same amount of money off of a game out there in the Ohio Valley Conference as you are out there in the ACC. So that's always a positive for this podcast. And Blake, I know you're breaking out a little bit of everything. I know you do a lot in terms of the SEC, but you dive into the low and mid-majors as well over there at Blue Ribbon Yearbook and so many other platforms. So let the good people at home know what's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, I always appreciate it, Greg. Like you said, in August now and the march towards the next edition of the Blue Ribbon Yearbook is on. That will be out soon enough. It is hard to believe that we are, you know, not that far away from the season now. And so, yeah, you can certainly check out everything the guys are doing over there at BlueRibbonYearbook.com and everything else. So you can follow me on Twitter at TheBlakeLevel.
Blake doing an absolutely incredible job. I give him all the credit in the world for joining me on this one, as there's a lot of unknowns out there in the Ohio Valley Conference, and he did a great job of being able to take a look at these rosters. So a big, giant thank you for him for joining me right here on the OVC Preview Edition of Coast to Coast Hoops. And coming next, I've got the task of giving my projector a finish for the Ohio Valley Conference for this upcoming season.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now a part of the Beeson Family Podcast. Blake Lovell always delivers whenever he's on this podcast. Did an amazing job taking a look at one of the most brutal conferences I have ever previewed on this podcast, the Ohio Valley. I mean, it is not the same without those teams that we all know and love at the top, but Blake does an amazing job taking a look at the game of college basketball. As you can tell, did a great job studying up on these teams that we're going to be seeing out there in the OVC. So we certainly do appreciate his efforts and shows just how much he loves college basketball. A big thanks to him for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast that I give you my Ohio Valley Conference projected order of finish. Now, because I am doing a conference preview today, it means that if there were any news and notes in college basketball yesterday, I will be cleaning those up on the podcast tomorrow, so I have no fear. I've got you guys all covered there, and boy, there is competition for dead last, and there is not good competition for dead last, as it's a tough call between Eastern Illinois and Tennessee Tech, but in a stunning upset, a team that wound up finishing 12-17 at the D2 level last year in Lindenwood, they wind up avoiding the cellar because Eastern Illinois is just that bad. They did not wind up having a single player that averaged more than 8.9 points per game last season. It was laid out by Blake. This is a team that they just really couldn't exceed 62 points in conference play last season. I mean, they were going up against teams like SIU Edwardsville, and they weren't able to get there. Now, Caleb Donaldson is actually a relatively high-level D2 guy that is going to be coming into the fold. He winds coming in from St. Cloud State. He should be able to elevate this team just a little bit because, quite honestly, a Martian might be able to upgrade this team. He wound up having some big numbers as a 6'4", little bit of a combo player last season at the Division II level, where he wound up lighting it up with 17 points, 4 assists per contest. He was able to haul in there 4 boards. Didn't shoot a bunch of threes, but when he shot them, he wound up making them. Wound up shooting 50% on his 16 threes last season. A little bit of a small sample size in that he only wound up playing 14 games. But, I mean, I'm just right now diving to the bottom of the barrel to find anything nice for this team to be able to build off of. I do think that down low, they're going to be able to get a little bit more support out of Rodolfo Rufino Bolis. He was able to do a nice job being able to get the team a little bit over 5 rebounds per game last season, so that is a good place to be able to start. He was able to deliver a little bit over a steal per contest as well, and if you're looking for a sharpshooter, one of the best in all of college basketball last season was Dan Lures. Lures wound up being able to shoot 52.3% from 3-point range. I was in the top 5 among qualifying players in all of college basketball, 8 points per contest, but for Eastern Illinois, they just need to be able to take care of the ball and grab a gosh darn rebound. They were in the bottom 5 in all of college basketball in terms of rebound rate, and the only, I guess you'd call it, entity that was creating more turnovers last season, that would be Sarah Lee's Bakery, as Eastern Illinois, they turned the ball over on 23.6% of their possessions. That was third worst in all of college basketball. Dead last in my projector finish, we are going to be going with Eastern Illinois. At number 9 in my projector finish, we are going to be going with Tennessee Tech, a team that they wound up having one guy last year average more than 4.5 rebounds per game in Amadou Ciala, and he is now out of the fold. That is not a place where you want to start, and they do wind up bringing in Jalen Sabree. He was over there at Florida Atlantic to begin his career, and then the last few years he has played at Morehead State. Could just never really find his footing at Morehead State. When he's been out there and he's been able to really fire on all cylinders, he's been an okay player, but he wound up having a massive fall off after he wound up having a season at Florida Atlantic, which he wound up averaging right around 9.5 points per contest, shot 35.5% from 3, could never really find it at Morehead State. Now, with Tyrone Perry, the gentleman that is going to be coming in from Lafayette, this is actually a relatively high-level guy. He was able to put up 12 points, 3 assists, 4 boards per game out there in the Patriot League, shooting 37% from 3-point range, but Tennessee Tech, from a team that wasn't necessarily that good last season, they were able to win 7 conference games, but I felt like that was a little bit of smoke and mirrors. They have to replace their top 3 scorers from last season. It's going to be really on Deontay Wood to be able to step up for this bunch. He was able to put up right
right around 6.5 points per contest, but he literally made as many three-pointers as myself last season, so that's not a great place to build around as Jacob Davison, Kenny White, pair of guys that they wind up losing. They wound up combining to shoot about 40% from three. Both of these guys were able to put up 10 points per game apiece, and they just really do not wind up having any size whatsoever. Danny Ramsey is someone that they're going to need to build around 7.5 points, 3.5 rebounds per game, and I'm going to call it what it is, John Pelfrey. Just not a good coach. We saw his work at Arkansas. His work at Arkansas, not good. His work at Tennessee Tech thus far, not good. Why should we be thinking anything else at this point? I've got this Tennessee Tech team, number 9 in my projector of finish as a result. And number 8 in my projector of finish, we're going to be going with Southern Indiana, one of the new teams coming up to the D1 level. They have Jelani Simmons, and Simmons is someone that wanted to begin his career at Youngstown State last season, 14 points, 4.5 boards at the D2 level, but hey, take a look at what he wound up doing while he was at the D1 level as a freshman and a sophomore. He wound up being able to average right around 6.5 points per contest. He wound up starting in half the games that he was able to while he was with the Penguins. So this is actually a guy that is a relatively high-level player. They do wind up bringing in some guys that were at the D1 level previously. Pete Nwoke, he winds up coming in from Michigan State. Don't get too excited from the name Michigan State because he was merely a walk-on for them. What I think is going to be interesting, Nick Hiddle. He is a 6'10 gentleman that last season he was playing at, ironically enough, Indiana State, the good old Sycamores. Did not wind up seeing the world's greatest amount of minutes, but with that said, he lends a 6'10 body, and I do think that he goes into Southern Indiana and is immediately going to be able to make a little bit of an impact after last season. He actually showed the ability to shoot threes, wound up shooting right around 40% from three-point range. Could be a nice little two-way player for this team, so I think that that is going to be able to help them out. And then Trevor Lakes is someone that wound up beginning his career at Nebraska, just could never really find a lot of minutes while he was with the Cornhuskers during the 2019-20 season. Was able to put up right around 3 points per contest, but a relatively high-level player while he was at D2 Indianapolis, so he's got some familiarity with the area while he was with Indianapolis, was able to put up some very strong numbers. I do think that Southern Indiana, just because they do wind up playing a very random style, if you take a look at the way that they wound up playing last season, they would go from playing a 90-85 game to playing like a 62-60 slobber knocker. That is actually going to help them out in this case, in my opinion. I do think that Southern Indiana is going to be able to catch a couple teams off guard. They don't necessarily have the world's greatest amount of talent, but I mean, let's call it what it is. This is one of the least talented conferences I've ever seen in my life, and that sort of a change of pace should allow them to be relatively competitive right from the jump in this conference. So in my projector or finish at number 8, I'm going to be going with Southern Indiana. At number 7, we still haven't brought up the team that wanted going sub-500 at the D2 level, and they are going to be continuing to move up because I've got SIU Edwardsville. I am right there with our good friend Blake Lovell. You just don't know what you're going to get out of SIUE. Certainly, I do think that they're going to be able to climb up the ladder, but this is a bunch that they have never been able to have an above 500 record, and I don't think that there's any reason to think that that winds up starting right now other than just the level of competition that they're going up against. Rayshon Taylor, he's able to do a very solid job of being able to put the ball in the basket and just be a takeover player. 17.5 points, 5 boards, 3 assists, 1.8 steals per contest. He did wind up missing 12 games last season, and you could tell that whenever he was not out there on the floor, this team just struggled almightily. As I mean, the way that he wound up closing out the season was very good, as the final 13 games that he wound up playing in, 18.5 points per contest, shooting 36.5% from 3, and that's a big X factor because this is a team that they were in the bottom 10 in all of college basketball in terms of 3-point shooting percentage. I think that it's going to be very important that the Wright brothers and Shamar and Lamar Wright, they wind up being able to step up. You can look up their story online. I'm not going to go into it on this podcast, but obviously we know about another Wright on a passing away many years ago. Both of these guys, they wound up being able to combine for about 7.5 rebounds per game, 16.5 points per contest. Dejon Pruitt, he's coming back after he wound up averaging 10 points, right around 7 boards per game. They really don't have a lot of guys that are going to be transferring into the program, and I do think that they just need a little bit more in the backcourt because that is really going to be a little bit of an albatross for this team moving forward. And when it comes to this SIUE team, it always just feels like whenever they finally wind up getting a little bit of something going on offense, the defense winds up going down the toilet bowl. When their defense finally starts to pick it up, the offense winds up going straight down the toilet bowl. Jalen Hoge, he's someone that is going to be coming in from of James Madison, and what was that, actually Louisiana Monroe. He was able to shoot right around 44% from three-point range, really couldn't find his footing with James Madison. I do think that he's going to come in, he's going to be able to make an impact right away, but still not necessarily bullish on this team, especially with a little bit of a lack of size on this roster as well. So number 7, my projector or finish, SIU Edwardsville. And number 6, Lindenwood, who finished 12-17 last year at the D2 level. I've got them number 6. Not because necessarily I think that Lindenwood is going to come in here and be gangbusters at the D1 level. It's literally because this conference is that bad. They do wind up bringing back Brandon Trimble, who's able to tear it up at the D2 level last season, as he wound up being a little bit of a surprise for this team, as he wound up putting up 12 points per contest, shot 92.5% at the free throw line, shot over 40% from three-point range, so he was able to be a big-time impact player. But I love what this team has been able to do via the transfer portal. They do wind up bringing in Cam Burrell. He was playing a few seasons ago over at Western Illinois. He should be able to come in, and he should be able to do a very solid job for this team. As 2 seasons ago, he wound up averaging right around 5.7 points, nearly 6 rebounds per game last season. Wound up seeing a little bit of a fall-off in regards to those stats, but someone that you're able to build around. And then the big thing for this team is that they get by far the best transfer coming in Chris Childs. He winds coming in from Bryant, who we remember they wound up being able to make the NCAA tournament last season, and he's going to be going into a program here with Lindenwood that they were able to average right around 73.5 points per contest at the D2 level. They wound up playing absolutely no defense whatsoever, but with that said, with Chris Childs at full force, this guy is very solid. During the 2020-21 season, 14 points per contest, shot 40% from three-point range, 86.5% at the free throw line, was limited to just 16 games last season, was dealing with a little bit of an injury. You could tell that when he was out there on the floor, he was at 100%. If Chris Childs can get back to that level that he wound up playing at 2 seasons ago, all of a sudden, you're really looking at a Lindenwood team that, I mean, let's call it what it is. They wound up having their struggles last season, but they did wind up bringing in a lot of guys to be able to fortify things. What else I think is going to be very interesting with this team as well is that they do wind up bringing in another D1 transfer in Donovan Moore. He wound up playing at UW Green Bay a few seasons ago. Not a guy that was necessarily too prolific, but with that said, began his career at Toledo. He's a 6'3" gentleman that is able to handle a little bit. I think that he's going to be able to elevate their three-point shooting just a tad as well. I think that Lindenwood has actually quite a bit of talent coming in, and that should really be able to push them up the rankings, in my opinion. I've got them number 6 in my projector or finish. It was a young team last season that wound up taking their lumps at the D2 level. Now I think that with these reinforcements, they're going to be able to have a relatively solid season. And number 5 in my projector or finish, I'm going to be going with Little Rock. Now, Little Rock wound up having a really grody start to the season last year, and they wound up finishing 3-11 in Sun Belt play. But if you take a look at the way that they wound up playing in that Sun Belt tournament, they wind up knocking off South Alabama, they wind up pushing Troy to the brink. You actually are able to feel relatively good about the way that this team wound up playing down the stretch now with this Little Rock team. It's a bunch of which they do wind up relying a lot on rebounding by committee. They need darn near everyone out there on the floor to wind up registering at least 4 rebounds per contest. That is going to be very big for them. And Marko Lucic, he is back after he wound up being limited to just 14 games last season. And while he was out there on the floor, he was able to put up 11.5 points per contest. And what I think is very important is just taking a look at the way that the team was different when he was on the floor versus when he was off the floor. The team wound up going 6-8 when he was on the floor. Now, I recognize that that doesn't necessarily sound too terrific, but with that said, they were 3-11 and wound up getting completely pasted when he was off the floor. So I think that is big. What else is going to be massive for this Little Rock team is just health in general, because you take a look out of their top 6 players that they wound up being able to put up in terms of points per game, all these guys, they wound up being able to score at least 9 points per contest. Among their top 6, they wound up having one guy that wound up missing fewer than 10 games last season. So health was a big thing for the team. Jordan Jefferson, he was able to put up 9 points per contest. He shot 41% from 3. He wound up missing 10 games last season. D'Antoni Gordon, he wound up coming in from Wichita State in his very small 8-game sample size, 10.5 points, 4.5 boards, clean bill of health for him. That should be able to help out. Isaiah Palermo, he's able to give you right around 11 points, 4 boards per contest. Now the thing is, you need all these guys to be able to step up, but you've got a roster of guys that they wound up seeing a lot of playing time last season. The big thing is finding that main ball handler. Is it going to be CJ White? Is it going to be someone else? That is right now the question for this Little Rock team. But I do think that they wind up going into a situation where they could have success right away, because quite honestly, this conference is relatively awful. So I do have them number 5 in my projected order of finish. And number 4, I'm going to be going with SEMO, Southeast Missouri State, as for Southeast Missouri State, it is all about playing defense for them, because last season they were a complete and utter sieve, as they were in the bottom 20 in all of college basketball in terms of points allowed on a per game basis. Now, they do wind up returning much of one and making them successful in the backcourt. Philip Russell, Chris Harris, these two guys wound up being able to combine for 23 points per contest, nearly 6 assists per game, both shot between 34 and 34.5% from 3-point range. Now, they're going to need to get a little bit more rebounding. They do wind up losing their top rebounder in Nigel Russell via the transfer portal, so that does wind up putting them behind the 8-ball a little bit. And this is a bunch that is coached by a guy in Brad Korn that I have a lot of respect for. I think that he wound up doing a very solid job while he was an assistant at Kansas State and immediately was able to help elevate this team just a little bit. Aquin Smart is an intriguing piece. He winds up coming in after he wound up being a top 250 recruit over there at Maryland. But what they're really going to be banking on, the 2 7-footers. David Idata, he winds up coming in from the Netherlands. And then they also wind up bringing in Mason Hanbach. He's a gentleman from the great state of Tennessee. If these two guys are able to emerge, I think that it's going to be very big for them. And then they do wind up bringing in Kobe Clark. He did not wind up playing a ton while he was at Georgetown last season, but he should be able to up elevate the team. A little bit of a 6'6" wing. He's able to pop a couple threes. You should see a lot of meaningful playing time right away. And I do think that that is going to be able to help them out immediately. They also bring in Josh Mitchell, someone from Mississippi Community College, Northeast Mississippi Community College. And he should be able to do a solid job down low. He's 6'8". He's got a little bit of versatility to him as well. And Israel Barnes, he is someone that winds up coming in from the area as well. He was a standout at D2 Newman College for the Jets. He was able to put up double figures over there. Relatively solid 3-point shooter at 6'4". So I do think that the arrow is trending upward for a guy that I think is a relatively solid coach in Brad Korn. I do think that, I mean, by default, the defense is going to be a little bit better for this bunch as well. So number 4 in my projector or finish, I'm willing to ride with a team that returns much of their backcourt in Southeast Missouri State. And number 3, I've got UT Martin, a team that they were second to last in the conference last season, wound up going through such an unfortunate circumstance as a few seasons ago. We all remember they wound up having to play without their coach, the unfortunate passing of Anthony Stewart. That was just very, very sad. And now his son, Parker, winds up returning to the program after he wound up leaving after his father wound up passing away. He just wound up sitting out the 2020-21 season. Cannot blame the kid for that. But you take a look at what he wound up doing while he was at UT Martin last. Well, throughout the year they had at Indiana last year, where he wound up having 6 points per contest. Did wind up shooting, by the way, in the Big Ten, nearly 40% from three, but obviously wasn't as versatile. He wound up during the 2019-20 season registering 19 points, 3.8 assists, 4.5 rebounds per contest while shooting 35% on 8.2 threes per contest. That is immediately going to be able to help out this UT Martin team. You've got KJ Simon. He followed Ryan Ritter over from Bethune-Cookman. He became a star in this conference last season. 17 points, 5 boards. He does a solid job of being able to get the ball out to guys, as he only wound up having 2 turnovers per contest, 1.6 steals per game. Now, this is a bunch that they're also going to need to do a little bit of a better job on the defensive side of things, but I do think that that'll improve as you wind up having someone like Josh Endicott wind up returning to the fold. He was limited just 17 games last season, 2 seasons ago, when I was in the Atlantic Sun for North Florida. 8.5 points, 6 boards, shot 46.5% from 3-point range as a 6'8", little bit of combo player. KK Curry, he is back in the fold as well, transferred in from South Alabama last season, right around 9.5 points. He was able to put up 5 boards, and he's able to shoot 38.5% from 3. Didn't wind up taking a lot of threes last season, but he's a guy that has been able to expand his game. I do like what I am seeing out of this ball. Chris Nix is someone that's able to give the team a little bit of rebounding. They bring in Jordan Sears, who was a very good 3-point shooter 2 seasons ago at Gardner-Webb. Had his struggles, but was part of a Gardner-Webb team that ranked in the top 60 nationally in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Riffin Miguel is someone that you also want to take note of. He winds up coming in from Troy, and while he was at Troy last season, wound up being able to give the team right around 2.5 rebounds per game. I think that he's going to see a lot more minutes, should be able to impact this team down low, and I think that UT Martin is actually going to to be one of your better low post teams in this conference, especially having a 6'5" wing like Parker Stewart. That is going to be able to elevate them. So I do have this UT Martin team number 3 in terms of my projected order of finish. And number 2, I am going to be going with Tennessee State. Tennessee State does wind up losing their main rebounder from last season and Kasim Nicholson, but I do like the way that this roster is constructed. Zion Griffin, he is going to be able to come in right away and he's going to be able to do a solid job. He wound up registering 11 points, 4 boards per contest while I was at University of Illinois Chicago last season, able to do a solid job of being able to stroke some threes at 6'7". They also wind up bringing back Marcus Fitzgerald Jr. He was able to register 12 points, 2.5 assists. He's a solid 3-point shooter, a guy that is able to do a nice job of just being able to stretch a floor in general. So I think that that is going to be very important for the team. And then they bring in Junior Clay. He last season in the conference was able to register 13 points, 3.7 assists per contest, shot in the high 30s from 3-point range as well. That is absolutely massive. Now, they took a little bit of a roll of the dice on Adong McHugh along with Zuul Keith. Both of these wind up coming in from Northern Illinois. And Northern Illinois was not necessarily too great last season. These guys did not wind up playing a lot, but that is going to be the key for the team. Just being able to have a little bit of rebounding, because even someone like an Emmanuel Duana, you know what you're going to be able to get out of him. He's 6'10". He did a nice job last season being able to get the team right around 3.5 boards per contest. He's actually someone that wanted coming in from Purdue. Felt like he needed a little bit of time to be able to get down the system. I do think that that is going to be key for them, because this is legitimately perhaps the best backcourt that we're going to see in the conference. If you can have someone like a Duana be able to give you 6-7 rebounds per game, that is going to be absolutely massive for this bunch. And he was able to emerge towards the front half of the season, as you take a look from the beginning part of the season all the way until December 21st when he fell out of favor a little bit more with the team. He was averaging right around 5.5 points and 5.5 rebounds per game. If he can get back to that form, going to be absolutely massive for Tennessee State, and I do think that he is going to be able to do so. So I've got in my projector or finish at number 2, Tennessee State, and then at number 1, despite the fact that they wind up losing by far, in my opinion, the best player out there in the conference of the teams that are returning, I've got Morehead State. They do wind up losing each other top 5 scorers from last season, but they've got back Jake Wolf. Jake Wolf is someone that is going to be able to shoot it well from 3-point range, shooting 48% from distance with right around 6 points, 2 assists per contest last season. Now, it is going to be a team that is going to be mixing and matching quite a bit, but the guy that I think is really going under the radar, and he was a very late commit to this team, that would be the Norfolk State transfer in Jalen Hawkins, who last year wound up being able to put up 13 points per contest from 3-point range, shot 35.5%. from 3-point range. And if you take a look at the season before, he only put up 10 points per contest, but he was able to shoot from distance 44% from 3. He's going to be able to do a good job of being able to help out this backcourt. Now, the big question that I have once again, Mark Freeman, what are you going to be able to get out of him in the backcourt? He wound up beginning his career at Tennessee State. Last season, he was at Illinois State, but in all 3 of his seasons, whether it be in the OVC or the Missouri Valley Conference, at least 3.1 turnovers per contest. That is a bit of an issue, but in his 2 seasons while he was in the OVC, wound up averaging 4.4 assists per contest. He wound up being able to really upgrade his 3-point shooting. In his 2 seasons at Tennessee State, he shot below 30% from 3 last year. He was able to shoot 38.5% from 3-point range at 87.5% at the free throw line, 9 points per contest. If you do wind up having a little bit more of perhaps a by-committee situation, that might not be bad for the team. Brandon McGumer, he winds up coming in from Cedarville. He should be able to take a little bit of the pressure off in this backcourt as well. You wind up bringing in Khalil Thomas, who he was able to do a solid job at UMass Lowell. He was able to give the team 9 points, 4 boards per contest last season, was a sharp starter that wound up being able to shoot right around 31% from 3-point range. Not too much of a facilitator at 6'5", but I think the real wild card and a guy that is going to be able to be a standout this season, that'd be Jordan Lathan. He wound up beginning his career at UTEP, was a starter right away at UTEP during the 2018-19 season. 11 points, 5 boards, 2.5 assists, shot 35% from 3-point range last year at UW-Milwaukee. He was giving out nearly 3 assists per game as a 6'4", a little bit of a combo player. I think that this is a guy that winds up taking the pressure off of Mark Freeman. You've got one of the best coaches in this conference as Preston Spradley. I do think is going to be able to get this team to fire on all cylinders. And, well, I think the biggest guarantee that I can make with the OVC is that whoever winds up winning this conference most likely is going to be earning a one-way ticket to Dayton. But with that said, I do think that Morehead State, they're going to be able to do a solid job of being able to mix and match, despite the fact that they do wind up losing a lot of pieces from last season. I think that Spradley has done a good job of being able to hit the transfer portal to be able to fill these holes. I've got Morehead State number one in my projector or finish, and that will wrap things up for the Ohio Valley preview edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN family and podcast. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you've got a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter timeline, at @JuneIn_41. Keep in mind, letters CM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline, and the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to find whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review, and I'm coming at you guys every single day with a fresh podcast here in the off-season news and notes of college basketball, along with these conference previews, and then once we get in season, going to be coming at you guys with picks and analysis on every single game, every single day. So I will chat at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.